Welcome to the GOGcast, brought to you by Mad Cats, all about the game, an XSplit broadcaster, simple yet powerful, live streaming and recording. And now, your host, Leah.
Hello and welcome to the annual GOGcast Game of the Year podcast for 2016.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, we're almost in 2017. How you feeling?
Thank God.
Yes. 2016 can die in the same fire that killed 2015.
I'm going to go ahead and say fuck 2016.
Like, goodness.
With the biggest F I can give.
Guys, but it was a pretty decent year for video games.
That's true. Though.
Thank
That's
God.
True.
Thank yeah. God. Our escapism lived to be glorious. My name is Leah, and I will be your host for this episode. Gotta thank, of course, Meltdown Montreal, where we are right now having a, as we would say in Newfoundland, a swally, a drink or two.
Oh.
I'm here with most of the Girls on Games senior team. We're missing one member, but she's a little bit of a distance, but...
And busy.
And cheers to Steph. But I'm here with Simon.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Well, thank
and what,
you.
What fancy drink are you drinking?
I'm drinking the Spectrum, which is named after Logitech's brand of things. Like their headphones and keyboards and stuff are called the Spectrum.
Yeah, Meltdown makes some really amazing drinks, and that's
like,
one of them.
Like Ali was saying earlier, it's like drinking your fruit roll-up.
Nice.
To give you an idea.
To the point that Ali is drinking the exact same thing.
Yes.
And a lot quicker than Simon is.
And she's about... I want to say a third my size, so this should be funny.
Entertaining. This is going to be a fun cast.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Kat, welcome.
Hello.
And what might you be drinking?
I'm drinking the James Rayner.
Yes, Jim.
Jim Rayner.
StarCraft 2.
I don't know him. I don't know StarCraft.
Is it good?
I just ordered it because it has coffee liquor in it. It's whiskey and coffee liquor, so it's not a sweet drink. It's a manly drink. It's take your time,
but
appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, Jim is a manly guy, so it makes sense that he has a manly drink.
I'm hoping also the coffee liquor is going to keep me awake so that I can keep drinking more.
That's okay. We just fuel up on Monster. There's Monsters, too.
There you go. There is.
Monsters is Monsters,
yeah.
So you can imbibe in that.
There you go.
Afterwards.
I'm drinking the First Blood.
Nice.
Is that it's pretty tasty.
With Tabasco? No, that's the Ragnarok.
That's the Ragnarok. No, this one has mint and berries and vodka and something else.
It's
I don't remember off the top of my head. It's tasty.
And yeah, there's lime in there.
I like it.
And mint.
So yeah, if you want really nice cocktails and you want a good atmosphere and some video games on the side, check out Meltdown in Montreal on Saint-Denis
Street.
And
if you feel like playing old consoles, there's
consoles
Montreal.
Here too.
There's Arcade in Montreal just
downstairs. Just
downstairs.
I've personally parked my boyfriend in front of Overwatch so that we can record this.
Yeah, so we can talk Game of the Year.
Because you definitely need to babysit her boyfriend. Just to make
sure yeah.
That he doesn't get bored and just.
Dr. Vizna is very high maintenance.
I love it. All right, so we're here with holiday cheer to, of course, talk about all the big news and stuff that went down in the world of video games that in 2016. Let's dive into it. I want to talk first about the biggest news stories of the year. Everybody's making faces,
yes.
And I don't know why.
Because I'm trying to put down my drink on the table without it making noise.
Oh, there
so
you
like,
go. Yeah, we're trying not to clack for you guys.
Yes, because it's very clacky, these mics.
All right. Allie, since you were the one that I saw with the craziest wacky face first, what was your biggest news story of 2016?
I chose kind of a broad topic because it was the center of a lot of news stories. No Man's Sky.
Oh, there you go.
Because it's something we talked about a lot.
And still are.
Yes, this past year. And just basically how that was a really good lesson in video games. I think we all learned, both from a consumer side and from a development side, very important lessons from both the creation and launch of No Man's Sky. So, yeah.
It's from the announcement of a game to the actual at like game launch mm-hmm. to afterwards in DLC. Mm-hmm. We learned how to not,
not video handle. Game.
Yeah, we basically learned what not to do throughout the entire process. And I mean, it's unfortunate, and a part of me feels very bad for the parties involved, but then another part of me goes, you should have known better. Especially in the case of like Sony being the publisher, like they really should have kept a tighter hold on that situation. But I mean, we lived and learned, and I think it's going to affect how a lot of people pre-order games in 2017 and how quickly people get on the hype train.
Have you, do you think that the release of the new update will change anything? Like, do you think people will come back to the game? Or?
No. I think people will come back, download it, try it out, but they're not going to stay.
Okay.
I mean, we've got other games like Astroneer coming out that are from the get-go providing people with what No Man's Sky promised.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's so many games coming out, even if they're not procedurally generated, you know, exploration games.
Yeah.
People don't have the time to revisit something that, for lack of a better term, wronged them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of cool new space games coming out.
There is, yeah.
There really are.
With even, like, I know this is kind of a far stretch from No Man's Sky, but Eve going free-to-play.
Yeah.
I think some
Elite
people
Dangerous
are,
is also Elite Dangerous very is a, looked upon. People love that game.
It's a good game.
And it's also VR ready.
Yeah.
VR being one of the big thing this year, and I think for next year, unless No Man's Sky is like, we're going virtual reality.
No one's gonna care.
No.
Yeah.
I think, and you know what? I don't even think it was the lack of features in the game that it, like, dug its own grave. I think it was the lack of communication. Like, as a professional community manager, it pained me to see how there was absolutely no updates
after,
for 2 months.
Wow.
There was too much communication, and then radio silence.
Well, it wasn't. There was just too much talking, not communication.
That's still communicating.
No, but I mean, it wasn't educated updates and releases of information. It was, I believe his name is Sean, who's the head of Halo Games.
Goodness gracious.
Sean Murray.
Murray.
Yeah, Sean Murray. Going and just talking.
Yeah.
And word vomiting out all of these features. And
hashtag
I mean,
word
I think
vomit.
I think he did have the intention of creating this massive game that contained all these features, but it just became impossible. And unfortunately, the internet's like an elephant. It never forgets.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to see Reddit posting these giant lists with like annotated like quotes and everything.
Things that he said that was going to be in the game that weren't. Yeah.
Promises. I mean, it was... Hello Games will learn from this experience.
And my question is, will they ever produce another game?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
You think?
Will. Of course.
And will people buy it?
They made so much money.
I don't know.
I'm not talking money.
I don't know if they'll make another like AAA scope game, but they've done a lot of smaller Facebook mobile type games before they did No Man's Sky. So maybe they'll go back into mobile and try to get a quick win.
Maybe.
While they figure out what they do. But
then again, like, I think Star Citizen is coming out in 2017, which is going to be, like, everything No Man's Sky promised and more and everything else.
Minus the artistic spin on it,
yes, minus the three-year-old-looking graphics.
Oh, jeez.
Whoa.
I think this was an experience, and I hope that they all manage to either find work or stay with Hello Games.
No, I mean, they're definitely talented, like, developers. It's not like... Okay, if you remove the fact that everything the game has been hyped about, it's not a bad game. It's not a premium $79 game.
Very true.
But it's a good $20 title with, like, many hours of enjoyment.
It sounds,
so
it's not more
bad
of an experience.
It was just...
Or
it was
experiment.
The uncontained hype train that brought it to a certain level, and it just underdelivered so intensely that that's what killed it.
I think that my main problem with the developer Sean Murray is that whenever he was asked a question like, will this be in the game, he never said no. He said maybe.
Well, that's
or
it, like,
he said,
word vomit, like, you
yeah
need to
exactly. He never denied anything.
It's, you have a certain responsibility when you go and you make public appearances and you're talking to your audience and talking to your community, and I don't know if he was not given parameters of like what he could say and what he couldn't say. And I do think some of the fault lies with Sony, just like feeding into the constant, you know, hyping of the game.
Yeah, for sure. I think the lesson to be learned is hire PR people.
Even
to
then,
do
I feel
things.
Like I feel like they kind of let them down too. Like, I mean, for No Man's Sky launched, and then it was like Sony kind of disappeared from the picture.
Like, we don't want to talk about this.
It never happened. Damn. Yeah. Anyways,
they were like, we have no choice. Here's your game. Bye.
Here's $69 of a game.
Peace
for
out. Yeah. Peace out.
Kat, what was your news story of the year?
I'm going to go with a broader theme, but I'm going to say the rebirth of Nintendo.
Whoa. Wow. Yes. Why rebirth?
Yeah, why rebirth?
Is it like a phoenix?
It's like a phoenix. Well, you know, we've been very disappointed with the Wii U with some of the releases in the past year. And I think we always say, like, you know, Nintendo's always been like, you know, mountains and valleys and mountains and valleys. Mm-hmm. And they're clearly on their way back up.
Yeah.
Just the fact that they're releasing on mobile. Mm-hmm. I mean, baby step with Pokemon Shuffle. Pokemon Go was a big release, even if they don't, if they're not completely behind that, because it's mostly that Pokemon company.
Yeah. But
Niantic. But at the same time, Nintendo owns enough share that they had to approve Pokemon going mobile. They're going mobile themselves. They had Miitomo, which of course was lost.
Fun for a week.
Fun for a week.
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, lost a lot of its appeal really quickly, but it was a quick win for them. And now there's Mario Runner coming to iOS. There's a free version, and then there's like they went with a DLC model. But, you know, and then there was the announcement of the Switch, which is a very bold console concept. The fact that it's going to be both a home console and a handheld. And just the reveal trailer showed no kids, no families, just like millennials, like people our age. Yeah, us. Hmm. So they're going for something different. Maybe they want the kid games to be on mobile. And on the 2DS, 3DS, if they keep that console alive, which they should because it's such a big success. They have another 3 or 4 years writing, just printing money with the 3DS without doing much. So, yeah, I think really like the kids game going to be on 3DS and mobile, and the Switch is going to be more of a serious, air quotes, serious console. So I'm liking what I see. I think they're understanding the changes that are happening in video games. And after taking a backseat for the past like 2-3 years, they're trying to be much more forward-thinking and innovative. And I'm liking it. Because if there's a company out there that's going to like do weird shit and make it work, it's got to be Nintendo. Like, I love Sony, I love Microsoft, but they are not risk-takers.
No.
Like, not in the same way. That's
not in the same way. And just even with the latest console releases, the latest game releases, I'm seeing a lot of like fan favorites having sequels or remakes, old games being remade and things like that. A lot of what Nintendo did with the Wii U, like I feel like Sony Microsoft is doing now, while in the meantime, Nintendo's like, well, let's shake shit up. And I'm enjoying it. For me, Nintendo is my biggest game, my biggest news story in general of 2016. And it's the company I'll be following the most in 2017.
Kat, you didn't even mention the biggest game of E3. Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild.
Yes, Breath of the Wild was announced a while back.
I know, but like it took over E3 2016.
Then why did I forget it?
And you know what? That's kind of
I think I'm purposely forgetting it because I want to play it so bad I don't want to think about it.
See, I'm the opposite.
Yeah?
I mean, it looks gorgeous. It looks fun. But it's forgettable to me. It doesn't look new.
Well, I don't think they're pushing it as much.
It's a Skyward Sword.
As everything else. I think they're really putting a lot of... They're like, yeah, you know... It's coming out. I think it's going to be an instant success, whatever they do.
110%, because, I mean, it's Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
They know it's going to sell. Yeah. Period. Yeah. Point
and
blank.
And they're not saying anything, because I think the release date is still far off. But yeah. Watching the footage during the Game Awards, I was like, oh, my God, this is so boring. Please stop.
Well, it's also the way they edited it. Come on. They took everything interesting out. You barely saw any battles. You saw the character die.
And you see Zelda.
And that's it. That's all you see.
Quote unquote.
I don't know. I think it's gonna. I think they need a bigger hook right now, other than just the fact that it's a new Zelda game.
They're keeping it quiet. They're keeping it forgettable, probably because they're gonna release it and it's gonna sweep everything, and they don't want Zelda to overshadow everything they're doing.
I think that what I'm enjoying them, well, even like in general, I think that Nintendo, yes, they often go for their trusted franchises like Zelda, Mario, and that kind of stuff. But they always make it interesting. Like, they always bring something to the table that's fun. Like, even, like, just look at the with the Wii U, like, Mario 3D Land World? I forget which it's Land or World.
World on the Wii U.
World on, okay.
Land is on the 3DS.
3DS, yeah. I mean, both were freaking fantastic.
Yeah, they're both really good.
So, like, it's a side-scroller, and it's still Mario, but they brought something really interesting to it.
And we know something else is coming, because in the Switch the commercial, yeah. There was... some Mario in some Mexican Day of the Dead land, which I'm telling you, it's tied into the Olympics. Guaranteed.
Maybe. Oh, because it's...
2020? When it's in Tokyo.
Yeah, so they're probably doing Mario around the world.
I love
it.
As long as there's no Sonic involved. Remember when Mario was...
Oh, Mario and Sonic at the Olympics?
Sonic can go home.
That's horrible. Go home, Sonic.
No,
you're
but
drunk.
It's true.
You're not,
I mean,
drunk, because no one likes you.
No one... I like Sonic when it's good, which has never happened often. No, but it's, I feel, and what I like about, like, you know, Nintendo are kind of going against the current with even with Zelda, because now it's all about, like, anti-heroes and, like, people who become heroes, not because they were meant to, but because it's just happening, whereas, like, Zelda and Link is almost like the knight and the princess story, kind of, which is always what it's been, and, like, they're not shying away from that kind of how they're doing, which is, you know, very against the current right now, which is the anti-hero who's the hero.
Yeah, the gritty realism, and they're going like, no, it's the Legend of Zelda. It's
exactly.
It's Hyrule, there's magic, there's fairies, there's
it's
a Triforce.
That's always been very Nintendo, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're childlike. But that's the aesthetic of Japan,
until
too.
Until Skyward Sword. It's Twilight Princess.
No, but I mean, if you think about it, then you have games like Persona and
but
stuff like that.
But
it's
still
a different...
That. They're still anime style. Like, there's still a little bit of that flavor in there, even if they're gritty and weird. Also, esports in that trailer.
Oh,
with
yes.
Splatoon.
Yeah.
Hey, they put it there.
Yeah.
They went there.
Well,
hey,
they went there.
That's
we don't
a great
know if it's still
segue.
Going.
That's
didn't
a great
Splatoon
segue into
win
mine.
Best esports game of 2015 at the Game Awards?
Did it?
I'm
I think it
pretty
did,
sure
which is
it did. So.
Dumb. So dumb.
I think they're barking up the wrong tree with that. I think that entire segment of the mm-hmm. commercial for the Switch was just
dumb.
It was straight up stupid. Like,
they need,
I mean,
if they want to do esport, they need to invest heavily into Pokemon. Like, they just need to have
imagine.
Actual sanctioned Pokemon tournaments.
Imagine.
And
well,
already
well,
they'll
like
have
Pokken like, and everything.
There
the Pokken
is,
tournament, yeah.
But it's still
it's like a fighting game.
Yeah. It's
well,
not Pokemon.
Come on now. We're forgetting about Super Smash.
Yeah,
yes.
But Nintendo's never really
never,
sanctioned any.
Exactly.
No, that's true.
No.
Yeah.
They never invested in.
Like,
into
instead
Super
of
Smash.
Being like, you know, Splatoon could be esports if we groom it. I'm like, or you can just put a cash prize on Super Smash and Pokemon and yeah. just sit back and let it happen.
Why didn't they do Super Smash there? Why would they go Splatoon? I didn't
I
even think
know.
About that before.
Probably know. Because they're planning on bringing Splatoon to the Switch. Probably a port as a launch title.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Dun, dun, dun.
And I think one. Super Smash and Pokemon are going to be further down in the console cycle. Because think about it, Super Smash came out, like, what, last year?
No.
No.
Came
yeah,
out
2015.
Yeah.
2015. But it was 3DS first, and then Wii U.
Yeah. But there... We talked about it, and there was that story about Pokemon Stars, like Sun, Moon, Stars, with the high rendered versions of Pokemon for the Switch. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you're having a tournament, it's going to be a 3DS phase.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's going to be Sun and Moon. And they just released that game. So if they're going to make something for the Switch for Pokemon, it's going to be further down the line. But no, I'm excited for Nintendo. I think they put on their big boy pants and they're like, all right, time back to the drawing board.
Truth.
Let's throw shit at the wall, see what sticks, and let's stop fucking up.
Rip Wii U.
Yeah. I think talking about esports kind of brings me into my news.
There you go.
Yeah. I think 2016 was the first year that esport actually started being taken seriously by the general media. I think it's the first time that in 2016 we're seeing important people / teams / companies investing in esport, making it become like a thing, an actual sport. You know, when you see someone like Shaq or investing into Energy or... Wow, that was loud. Holy shit. Cut, sorry.
It's all right.
When you see someone like Shaq investing into a big team like Energy, or like even Richard Fox, the owner of
Fox
built,
Gaming,
Echo Fox, who built pretty much a team from the ground up, and you're looking at what Overwatch is doing with the Overwatch League. Now you have like team actively. I saw an article last week. They're actively looking for big investors, like right now, to buy an Overwatch team, a decent Overwatch team, it's about $3 million.
Well, look close to home. We've had two big events here Northern Arena, DreamHack, both sponsored by Bell, which I work for, and
which
I'm like,
is insane.
Whoa.
When you think about it. No, I mean, I think that 2016 is the starting point for something huge in esports in the coming year, just because now everything is set in place. You know, the investors are here, the teams are here, the games are... I think the variety of games also is really fun. Like, we're at Meltdown and we're watching Vainglory, which is it's a freaking mobile game, and it's
awesome,
like $100,000 tournament. It's just crazy, you know? So, and you know, there's always going to be your big players like Dota, League of Legends, CSGO, and Overwatch is, in 2017, is going to become one of the big players. So I think it's going to be those four games really leading the charge. But it's impressive to see what's happening right now with esports.
Agreed.
2017 will be the year that esports breaks through, the real
media.
Yeah, exactly.
The barrier.
It's gonna be the end of 2017 with E-League, which we're actually watching right now, like E-League, which is on TBS, it's still something, but we're gonna, like, in 2017 we're gonna see big channels, the big names picking up esports games happening. So I think it's gonna be pretty fun to see.
Fun times.
Yeah.
Fun times ahead.
Yep.
I like it. Me personally, VR was probably the biggest story, because it finally became something that I could see being real. Because it's always been like this ethereal thing, like virtual reality. You think about it in Star Trek, and you think about it in like going to a venue trying a unit on and doing a demo, and that was it. But now we had the launch of PlayStation VR, and I get it. I understand it. I've tried the Oculus. I've tried the Vive. I've tried Google Cardboard, which is probably the cheapest way to get involved. And then we've tried the Gear. And on top of that, AR, because I've done the HoloLens now too. So
that's where
it's coming.
At.
And I really, the HoloLens is
impressive.
That's
where it's at. That is where
I can see the applications.
At.
Yes. I can see the applications of that beyond gaming. And that's how it's really
going
to own it.
That's why it's
going to
work.
Yeah. So I come from a family of doctors. I can totally see how this would benefit what they do, and how prototyping can be done, looking at x-rays, looking at MRIs. Can you imagine getting someone have an MRI and then being able to look at it?
On the patient
and project it? It's wild. It's wild. And then on the gaming side of things, we live in a world where we're inundated with messages all the time. I can't play a game and not have the phone ring, text messages popping up on my phone, a notification that you know, someone's come online and wants to chat with me. You know, I'm always multitasking. When I had that PSVR unit on and the headset on, I was honest to God in another world.
Nothing else is happening around you. Yeah.
To a point where it was a little scary at first because you couldn't see.
Yeah.
But you were teleported.
Mm-hmm.
I was the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And that really makes me happy.
Was anybody else surprised how, like, PlayStation VR launched and then it just nothing happened?
Yeah. What do you mean?
There was, like, no fervor around it. I forgot that it was releasing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was only at the end of the day that it had released. I was like, oh, shit. That came out today.
I think it's still niche.
Yeah,
because it's
like,
still a pretty
no...
expensive price point.
Yeah.
It is. It is. And you're not going to go out and buy a PlayStation to get the PSVR. I think it's something for people that already have consoles. Because the console itself, right now, there was a bundle during Black Friday, which was like $350, which is the cheapest the console's been so far.
Right now, I look, because my PS4 is starting to die. The regular PS4 right now is $300, and the Slim is $320. I found a $321 on Best Buy, which comes with Uncharted 4.
Yeah, that's the Black Friday deal. They probably extended
it
because they didn't sell.
At Best Buy, it was still $320.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that if you need to get the $300 console and then you need to get the $600 or the $900 kit, because if you don't have the PS camera and the moves, you need to get the kit that comes with it. I think not a lot of people are going to be like, yeah, I'm going to spend $1,000 on this.
Yeah, but like then again, if you want to get a Vive and a decent computer to run it, that's going to be $1,000. No, it's going to be
$1,000. But
$1,
it's like,
so
I think, I think why Ali mentioned that there was a lot of like a bit of a marketing blackout, it's because they're not marketing it towards new players.
Consumers.
They're marketing towards people that already have a PlayStation 4 that can... And Leah, you tried it with your day one edition PlayStation 4 and it ran fine.
It was great.
You don't even need to wait for the PS Pro.
No, that's the truth. But just in comparison to other technologies that are supposed to do the same kind of thing, like 3D televisions, I can see this already has made leaps and bounds above what 3D TVs can do.
3D TVs were a gimmick.
I don't even
use 3D on my 3DS, and it's one of the best 3D experiences.
I don't use it. I turn it off.
No one uses it. Is it even on for Sun and Moon?
I don't know, because I don't think it's working.
Actually,
I'm not the only one.
Clicking the switch, it's like there's nothing happening.
I'm not the only one. I dropped my 3DS the other day, and I assumed I had broken it, the 3D, because it didn't work for Sun and Moon.
No, mine's fine, and it's just like I flip it on, and nothing, not even like during battles or anything, it's just nothing happening.
Nobody uses it.
No one does, because it's... Like,
and they probably... Yeah, and it's like the 3D is actually non-beneficial for kids under a certain age. That's why they did the 2DS.
Right.
I'm pretty sure Pokemon is being sold way more for the 2DS as the 3D. Like, I'm pretty sure parents are like, I'm getting Sun for myself and Moon for my kid, and I'll give him a Ditto so he can farm me something.
An off-region Ditto so it can get shinies.
There you go.
Yes, from Wonder Trade.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to jump into surprises of 2016. Hold up. Back talking Game of the Year 2016. Topic of this part of the podcast gonna be our surprises of the year. Who did I throw to last time? I think I went Allie first, so this time I'm throwing a cat. Cat, what was your biggest surprise of 2016?
So I know I already went Nintendo heavy, but my biggest surprise of the year was the Switch. It was not what I expected. It was not the kind of announcement I was expecting. They managed to not get it leak, or it leaked so close to the announcement that nobody cared. It's just like, it featured, like, their announcement featured just young adults. They went the esports route, and then they go with this very bold design. It was, for me, like, I remember watching this announcement and just being like, oh, ben, tabarnak.
Are you, like, excited? Happy?
I
sad?
Am- I'm
wondering?
Excited. I'm yeah. Well, I'm going to get it. It's going to yeah. have Breath of the Wild and eventually Mario Kart. Of
hey,
course I'm getting it. Small, Nintendo can do no wrong.
Oh, my God.
Actually, no, they can do wrong.
Yeah, let me educate you on that one.
They can do a lot of wrong, like the video game crash of the 80s and 90s. But if it... As soon as they release a Mario Kart or the Breath of the Wild, I'm going to get that console. But yeah, I was just like, okay, after the Wii U was like such a clusterfuck, you're going even more into fucked up console design? All right, I'm in. Let's go.
Sweet.
It's going to be an interesting one, that's for sure.
It's going to be, you have to see it to believe it. I mean, the GameCube was a great console, but it... It still managed to flop, so we'll see.
Yeah, January 12th, I think we're going to get a lot of news.
What's
yes.
January 12th?
They're doing another release of information. I imagine we're going to get a date and a price.
Cool.
That's what I'm thinking. Allie.
Yes.
Surprise of the year.
My surprise is actually Chris Metzen from Blizzard retiring.
Oh, right.
I'm so sad.
Yeah, that was like... I was oddly emotional when I read that Facebook post.
We all were.
I understand why he did it. He did it for all the right reasons, you know, wanting to spend more time with his family. But the mark that he left on Blizzard's IPs, I mean, it's going to be everlasting.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to miss him. His presence, he was like the cool dad of Blizzard.
Whenever he walked on stage,
oh my God, people went nuts. He had such
a
presence.
Superstar. Yeah.
Yeah, he had such a presence, and he was down to earth, and yeah. he was friendly. And I mean, I didn't know him personally, but no. I mean, as a community member, like as like a Blizzard fan, I felt like he was a great mouthpiece for Blizzard, and his contributions to the games were, I mean, poignant.
Well, like Jeff Kaplan was saying, Chris Metzen does not have an off switch. So that's why he needed to, like, he couldn't just do less. Like, it had to stop completely because he can't, like, just get a little invested. No, if he goes in, he goes in all the way, which is probably, you know, what made Blizzard so popular when it first started. It's because you have guys like him who just never stop working
so
on games and titles and stuff. Yeah, exactly. Dedicated not only to the games, but to the fans. So it's,
He reminds me of the Steve Jobs... Like figurine.
He was,
do you know what I mean? Like
he's
persona.
He's an idol for a lot of people.
Like I said, he's the cool brother or dad of Blizzard. Like everyone just went nuts for him. And I mean, he's gonna be missed, and he's never gonna really be gone because I mean, his voices are
characters.
We're always gonna hear them, and we're never gonna forget them.
Yeah.
But it was sad. It was a surprise to me. And I really hope that it's not the last we ever hear of him. Yeah, I can't see him staying away for too long.
He's going to take a year off or two. I'm almost 100% sure he's going to be announcing the next WoW expansion at BlizzCon next year.
Come back.
I'm sure
better than ever.
Yeah.
No, well, because, you know, he usually, you know, does the panels and stuff. No, he's just going to come and he's just going to, like, announce the next WoW expansion or something, and that's just what it's going to be.
It'll be like that PlayStation and one more thing, but it'll be like, and one more thing, and then he'll walk out on stage and just like confetti cannons will go off, and
I'm gonna cry.
No, he was a like hashtag good guy Metzen.
Yeah,
like
nice.
Yeah.
So yeah,
definitely.
Sweet. Simon,
yes,
surprise.
My biggest surprise of the year is the Overwatch League. I'm a big esports fan, and it's with all the other esports apart from LCS, really, they're not organized. It's everyone doing their thing and hoping that teams come to the tournament, pretty much. And what Blizzard is doing with the Overwatch League is literally like having the What Blizzard is doing with the Overwatch League is literally just, for those who, like, it's literally the NFL or, like, the NHL of esports. Like, you're going to have teams in different regions. You're going to have, like, drafts. You're going to have the minor leagues. You're going to have the major leagues. It's insane. Like, the amount of money that Blizzard must be putting in there must be absolutely immense, you know?
But somebody needed to do it. Somebody needed to groom the amateurs into professionals.
Yes.
And you couldn't have done that with any of the esports going on right now, because that would have disrupted everything that's happening right now, and you would have had a lot of table flip moments from a lot of big teams. You had to start with a game from scratch.
Yeah, and I think that they're really setting up Overwatch to become the biggest esports in the world.
And I mean, Blizzard's always kind of taken control of the esports of of their games.
Yeah, StarCraft.
And so, StarCraft, Hearthstone, WoW, Heroes. PvP, Heroes. So, I mean, it's like a huge pat on the back for them to like take it one step further and get the community involved. So I mean, people being able to create teams locally and the potential of getting further in their esports careers, even if you're just starting. You know,
I mean, it's almost going to be like when you invest, you know, when you're a kid and you know you invest time and money into becoming a professional hockey player or whatever, it's going to be the same kind of thing. It's going to be players with salaries, with, you know, living conditions and stuff. So it's absolutely insane. And everyone's going to want to have their team. Like, that's what's happening right now. Big teams like Cloud9 and Liquid, like, they're searching for investors to buy Overwatch teams.
I can't wait for the day that I walk into a sports memorabilia store and I see the Habs jersey, the Blue Jays jersey, the Expos jersey,
Scarlet's
and whatever
keyboard.
Scarlet. It is.
Scarlet's keyboard.
Scarlet's keyboard.
Yeah. Or her mouse or something. Yeah.
No, but I want to see, like, a t-shirt that represents my Montreal Overwatch team.
Yeah, okay, so that's what you mean.
That's what I want.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that it's Blizzard. It's this huge company that's setting the bar for other companies like Valve to make sure that their players are treated right.
Yes.
You know, with visas, with payments, with housing, like you mentioned. I think it's so important that a big company stepped up and was like, hey, to be taken seriously, we need to get all, like, we need to treat our players right and make sure they're protected and have rights. And so I'm really excited about Overwatch
that's one of the biggest concern that esports players have right now is that I'm talking about CSGO again, like, there's so many tournaments and there's so many, like, there's little to no downtime now anymore because there's so many tournaments happening. So, you know, you have players playing in Montreal one day, and then 2 days after they're playing in Tokyo, and then the day after they're playing in Leipzig. So it's insane.
They have
like,
no time
right
to
now.
Train.
No.
No time to recruit.
Yeah.
Like,
right now it's
quality
absolutely
of life
insane.
Is
yes.
not, yeah, not,
it's not there.
So
it's
seeing Blizzard doing, no, we want to take care of people. We want to, you know, we want to offer them a steady job. We want it to be like, you can have a career in esports. That's basically what they're offering, which is, you know, think about it. Just your career, you're an esports player. Like, that is, just think about it. Even like 3 years ago, that's something that you never thought would happen. And now it's something that can actually happen. So it's insane.
All right. My surprise of the year was an announcement, and mostly the way that it was announced. And it has to be Super Mario Run, in that how I was watching an Apple event because I wanted to see the next phone. And then all of a sudden, Simon's drinking. It's all
I'm
good.
I'm so sorry.
It's all good. And then all of a sudden, Miyamoto comes out on stage. Like, not only did Nintendo decide to go mobile, they went straight up Apple announcement mobile.
They went to the fucking keynote. They showed up and
they were like, we're going to do this. If we're going to do this, we're going to do it on fire. Right? Now, as of the recording of this podcast, we haven't played it yet. So we can't tell you if it's good or not. But
I don't even have a iOS device.
Sorry.
It's
gonna my apologies.
Android for sure.
I'm patient. I'll wait. I like my phone much better than I like a mobile game.
It's all right. I'll play for you and tell you whether or not you'll like it. All right. That is the end of the surprises for 2016. Take a little break. Gonna jump into what made us sad. We'll be right back. Back, Game of the Year edition of the GOG cast. I'm here with Simon, Allie, and Kat. Myself, I'm Leah, and we're about to get into our disappointments of 2016. Wah, wah. And you know what? I'm going first. Why? Because I hated Star Fox. No! It's a lie! And then, like, it's so funny when you go back and look over this, and it's to the point, like, I rage quit on that game so bad, I forgot it came out this year.
Wow, that just tells you how bad it was. Ugh. Your brain chose to shut it down.
I put it, it's in a closet right now. The actual box is in a closet, because I don't even want to look at it.
Surprised you didn't burn it.
So sad. Talk about the death of the Wii U. That thing put the nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's it. That's all I got. That's my sad story of the year. Good. There you go.
Felt good.
Oh, I feel better. Feel vindicated. It's all good. All right. Simon.
Yes.
What was your sad moment of 2016?
Yes. And I'm going to make a lot of people wonder why I'm saying this, but it was Northern Arena.
Oh. Ooh.
Yes. So I thought that the Northern Arena at Fan Expo was pretty... It wasn't good. Like, there were delays, weird stream issues, and just, like, generally it was the area where it was being played. Like, we went, like, we were there for 3 days. We tried to go every hour, and never were we able to actually sit down to watch a game. There was so many people. I think, you know, I guess they were a victim of their own success in a way, because, like, they just couldn't fit as many people as they wanted. But, you know, that happened. So, and then I was super excited for Northern Arena in Montreal. Unfortunately, I couldn't physically be there. But I guess also one of the reasons that I didn't really force myself to be there was because I didn't care.
Why didn't you care?
Because, well...
You were so disappointed by Fan Expo that you were like, this just can't be good.
Yes, and also the teams that were there. Okay. The prize money that was there. It's like right now you have... completely new tournaments happening right now with like $500,000 in prize money, like out of nowhere. And I understand that it's hard to get that kind of money just out of nowhere, but the fact that also it was at the same time as the IBAT Power Invitational, the fact that it was, just the timing was just not good, and it was just tier two teams. There wasn't any world contenders in there. There wasn't any, you know, even the matches. Well, the matches were not too bad. Like, some of them were interesting, and I'm glad that Optic won. But I don't know. I just feel that it was a B event again, and I was expecting it to be an A list event, but it was a B event. So that's why I'm disappointed. I'm not saying it was a bad event, but I was expecting way more of this.
But
event.
The production quality, they yeah. opted for oh, Montreal. Yeah.
No, the production value was fantastic on stream. No issue, no whatsoever. I guess I'm disappointed, but it's my own fault because I was expecting something much bigger and much. Much more like
the thing about big, Northern Arena at the Bell Center. Yeah. It was what I had hoped for DreamHack mm-hmm. and for ESWC a few years back.
Yeah, my God.
It actually, like, that's what I wanted. That's yeah. what I wanted to see. Now, obviously, it takes more marketing to get more bodies in the seats. I mean, the Bell Center is one of the biggest Huge. Arenas in North America. If well, not, I'm not sure. Is it the bigger arena? I'm asking the producer here. Yeah, it's the biggest arena in North America, period. Yeah. So if you're going to, like, put off something there, no, but you want to sell it.
And arguably, they did end up getting stuck with a Sunday, too, yeah, which is hard.
Sunday night.
You lose a lot of crowds.
And
they had everything working against us.
Three different games. Them. Three different games? Yeah. Four different games, because Clash Clans Vainglory, is in there.
Clash Royale.
Yeah. yeah. So it's hard to keep bodies in a seat when it's entirely different communities, right?
Well, not only that, but yeah, they had everything working against them because, one, they had no, you know, tier one teams. So, of course, no one, you know, people, they're not necessarily going to show up because you don't have your Nips, you don't have your Fnatics. Well, even Fnatic sucks now. Like, you don't have your big name teams. No, they do. So that's going to be one of the reasons. Also a Sunday. Also, it's just the timing was completely off. I really feel that it could have been so much more if they just maybe changed the date, try to do it on a Saturday. Like, just wait further down the road to see if you can even push it to 2017.
Yeah. Well,
just to get the big names, and then you can have maybe up the prize pool or something. Fingers, do a community founding or whatever.
Fingers crossed that they do. I mean, they did what they could with what they had. Yeah, I feel like.
They really jumped in, like, the deep end.
Oh, yeah.
For events here in Montreal. Like, I mean, yeah. the Bell Center and having four games at a time. Like, that was, I think, a big undertaking for first...
Yeah. First huzzah.
I know it's, like, the second one, but it was the first big one.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I was a little disappointed too. I felt like timing was a really big issue. Mm-hmm. I thought that production value was great.
Yep. Yeah.
But having giant speakers blocking the screens from every vantage point.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
We couldn't see a full screen. We couldn't see a full screen. I remember that.
So the setup was a little bit wonky. The teams, like Simon mentioned,
like
not the best.
God bless Optic and G2, but no.
The most exciting part was during the Dota game. And I don't follow Dota, but I felt like it had the closest vibe in the arena to what was expected. Mm-hmm. But then after that was over, everybody kind of peaced.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was so late for the CSGO match.
Yeah, I couldn't stick around for that.
Sunday night.
And I even had the day off to go to MIGS the next day.
I know. So. I had to be at MIGS Brighton early the next day, so I was like,
yeah, same here.
Sorry.
I had to leave.
But as big of a disappointment as it was, do we have hopes for the future for Northern Arena?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
For sure.
I think they showed us enough that they can do it, and now they know how to spin it. Do you know what I mean?
Not only that, but I think that DreamHack is actually going to have more than StarCraft 2 this year. Like, they're going to have CS confirmed, StarCraft 2, maybe League of Legends, I think. So competition is always good. So Northern Arena are going to want to do something also interesting and impressive. So I think shooting for the Bell Center for your first, quote, first event was a bit too much. Like, go for some, like, I don't know, Place des Arts or whatever.
Well,
which is smaller,
I know they're working on that other arena up in Laval. That might be a better, more manageable venue for something like that. But mind you, it's not in the downtown core, but it won't be as big.
That's it's on a Saturday
if it's open
afternoon,
by then.
It'll
if
be
it's,
a little
if
bit
it's,
more
if it's,
deep.
If it's big, yeah.
Exactly. Saturday in June,
and if it's open,
they're going to fill the arena.
Yeah,
100%.
And not four games.
No.
Yeah.
Allie. What was your sad moment of the year?
Don't make me sad
it's okay if it's a one-liner.
This is going to be short. Tom Clancy's The Division.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think I need to say anything else.
Oh,
do you
want to
know what?
Okay.
I started playing again.
Will you?
It's really fun.
That's the thing. Like, I
I'm
keep
giving
hearing
him, like, the
stinkiest of eyes.
What is up with these games that come out and then we're like, ugh, and then all of a sudden we get patches and shit and people are having more fun?
Early.
Well, and then everybody jumps back in and, like, yeah it's good now. But,
it
like,
is.
When we got it, when we were excited to talk about it, it's like, wah, wah.
And even, like, I revisited The Division after it received some updates and some patches, and I still wasn't happy with it. I think it's unbalanced and it's lacking something. I don't know what it is, and I think they're taking too long to patch and update it. I mean, at this point, it's been like a full year almost. I think Ubisoft struggles with post-launch support of their titles, and Tom Clancy, I mean, I was stoked for Wildlands, and now, A, I don't see anything about Wildlands, and B, I don't want to get burned again, because I feel like The Division was a big burn. So that was my disappointment this year.
Miss Catherine.
I'm going full on Nintendo tonight. My biggest disappointment was Pokemon Go. Yeah. Because it was the game I wanted to play ever since I launched Pokemon Green. I had green or blue. Anyway, I had...
Green didn't exist. It was red or blue.
It was red
green
or blue?
Green did come
eventually. But
yeah.
The first gen was...
Okay, so
blue.
It's blue. I had Pokemon Blue because I remember buying it on release in 1996.
Get it right, Catherine. Come on. Pokemon fanboy and can't even get it right.
Jesus. Listen. So ever since I played the original Pokemon 1996 on my shitty ass brick Game Boy dot matrix under a spotlight so I could kind of see, I was like, this shit would be great in real life. Like, they need to bring it. And Pokemon Go came, and I was just like, yes, 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 yes. The 11-year-old in me just, like, was losing her shit. And then the game came, and it was... so bad. The first 2 weeks were amazing. You know, Pascal and I would walk around our neighborhoods I'm gonna. We used Poke Finder or Pokemon or
yeah,
whatever.
We had a. I went with you guys and we just walked around for a whole afternoon and got ice cream and stuff just to catch Pokemon. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. It made us discover our new neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We just moved there. But as soon as they removed the tracking, I lost interest. Yeah, like, it was just. At one point, I kept catching the same Pokemon. There was no way for me to check if there was.
Fucking drowsy.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Montreal is full of drowsies. Yeah. And
all drowsies. We only caught Pidgeys, Rattatas, drowsies. There was. I got excited when I saw a Ghastly, but then. By the way, Falm Metro always had Ghastlies.
Come back to Homa.
And then Gengar.
That's where all the Ghastlies are.
Yeah. And then it was terrible. But yeah, always the same Pokemon. They removed the tracking. Mm. They shut down all the sites. So there was no way for me to see if there was something else than a fucking Drowsy and a fucking Rattata around my house or even around work. And I think I completely disconnected because I work near Ubisoft and every lunch hour they would drop lures and around the lures all you would see were PGs and Rattata and I was like I'm done and I'm done. The game I've been waiting 20 years for sucks. Yeah. That's when I had that realization and I was like I'm just gonna wait for Sun Moon and I'm gonna just have I'm gonna grieve Pokemon Go. Mm.
Because, like, even you looked at the trailer when they released it, it's like, you're walking in the wild, and like, oh my god, there's a Charizard over there, let's go catch a Charizard, and then you're like, no, I'm catching Pidgeys sitting in my...
If you want a Charizard, how many Charmanders you have to catch?
A billion.
How many Charmanders are there around? I don't know, I can't fucking track them!
when did it come out? This summer?
June?
Okay, we are, like... The beginning
December?
Of December right now, and they just now updated with the tracker.
Well, and it works pretty decently. Like last night I went out and walked the dog and went to the park by my house because I saw that there were two Magmar and they actually appeared. I caught one of them, the other one ran away, but
it's much
friendlier now.
But it's now, again, too little too late.
I know.
Like,
what is up with that?
If they had kept external websites working... fine, you know, if they had that to keep going behind application and stuff to find Pokemon, and if they weren't like actively shutting them down, then they would have probably kept a lot of their player base. But they were so hard-headed into closing those websites down and not offering, that's what pained me most, they were not offering an alternative for it.
And the only Pokemon event happened for Halloween.
Yeah.
That's a long time. Yeah,
and it wasn't even like
wasn't
people
great.
Were expecting, because with Niantic's other game, Ingress, right? They have like live events where like people gathered like a common goal. And so that's what people were expecting for Pokemon
expecting
Go.
Expecting like legendaries to spawn from this hour to this hour.
And to be honest, like the removal of tracking and shutdown of tracking sites wasn't what deterred me. It was just the fact that I was getting the same Pokemon.
Yeah.
Over and over, and it wasn't even Pidgeys and stuff. Like I had a pretty decent route from work to home and to home from work, and I was getting a lot of variety, and I traveled to the States and I was getting a lot of different Pokemon, but it was just like came to a point where like I could almost pinpoint like where that Meowth was gonna spawn or where that Nidoran was gonna show up, and like to me it was just like I want to see Gen 2. Like,
I
need
man.
More.
When that's going to happen, that's going to be...
And where
I, like,
are
I
the
just,
legendaries?
I just,
where's the Zapdos?
Yeah, I just
well,
started playing again, and I just...
For sure for that.
Do you think there'll be
but
a Christmas
but why
event?
Why not already? Like, there should have been...
Because there's so... I feel that... I don't know how many people are actively working on Pokemon Go, but I feel that it's not enough for the amount of people who are still playing the game, because I feel that they're having issues just keeping up with updates and bringing... functionalities that people have been wanting since the game release. Like, just now they released a tracker.
It's
been 6 months, and people have been asking for it for 6 months.
It's to the point where I wonder if that Pokemon company's like, Niantic, do whatever you want to keep the game alive. We just wanted a marketing push for Sun and Moon. And now Pokemon Company's just like, Sun and Moon. Yeah, Pokemon Go, downloaded.
I never really saw anything from that Pokemon company.
What do you mean?
Like, promoting Pokemon Go.
Well, it was that commercial and the online stuff. But no, they didn't do TV commercials or anything like that. But it almost took on, it became its own beast. I mean, yeah. Catherine, you and I have never been requested interviews as much as Pokemon Go. Even when Gamergate was happening, it wasn't as big as Pokemon Go. Mm-hmm. That week was nuts.
Honestly, like, I've never had, like, in the past 20 years, I've never had to explain myself as to why I love Pokemon so much. What is Pokemon? Why it's awesome? Why I've been playing for 20 years? Until Pokemon came out, Pokemon Go came out. Mm-hmm. Once Pokemon Go came out, everybody was like, "Catherine, you know Pokemon, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." And it's just an interview request, or just people down the street, or just people in my family explaining, like, just hounding Pascal and I about Pokemon and what it's about, mm-hmm. because Pokemon Go was so big. And they're like, "So, were you guys excited about Pokemon Go?" I'm like, "We've been playing Pokemon for 20 years, the both of us. Of course we're fucking excited." But it's, for them, it just showed up on their radar, which is funny, because for the past 20 years, there's been games and mangas and TV shows and everything that comes with it. Mm-hmm. And it took Pokemon Go for people to notice. That many people to notice. So...
it's a shame that it came with such a shitty game.
Seems like a trend, though. People don't know how to support their games post-launch.
Yep. Oh, that's...
I think that might be the trend in 2016.
Nintendo and probably Niantic made... Pokemon Company, sorry, made so much money Pokemon Go launched that they're like, whatever the fuck. They get to do whatever the fuck they want with the game.
I don't think they
point.
Realized what was going to happen.
No.
And I think it's really interesting, it's when you boot up Pokemon Go, you don't see Pokemon Company logo anywhere. You just see Niantic. So I feel to them it was like testing the waters with something that wouldn't directly affect their, you know, their IP. It
their
was just like
line.
A it was like tested out. And now I think Niantic, first of all, I think they're too small to support this by themselves. But it's interesting you mentioned like post-launch support lacking being the trend nowadays. Yeah.
I think it's a new thing because of the internet. And we didn't have this 10 years ago. You put out a game and that was it. Now you need to support it post-launch
people
with DLC, whatever, fix patches, fix, you know, all these kinds of things. We never had that before where you'd put in a game and have a day one patch.
No.
That's the trend of 2016. Oh, my
and
God.
Don't forget that your consumers have way more platform where they can complain about your game.
I was just going to say, it's a mix of what Leah mentioned about having to, like, you don't just buy a game and play it anymore. Mm-hmm. You buy a game and then have it fix itself, and then you play the game. Mm-hmm. But it's also a mixture of entitlement. You know, gamers buy a $70 game and then they expect a certain level of initial, you know, satisfaction and then continued satisfaction. And in some respects, that's fair. Like with Halo 5, you buy the $70 game, but then you've also been promised constant updates, and which they've delivered on. But then there's games like Pokemon Go where we weren't really promised anything, but we played it.
And yet we're still disappointed.
And yeah, we're still disappointed and we still want more. And it's like, but do we actually deserve to feel that way?
Well, it's...
it's a free game.
It's a free game. I think the people that were asking for, like, refunds on their in-game purchase and whatever...
oh my God, yeah, that made me so angry.
That's entitlement. But for me as a Pokemon fan to be like, hey, can I get something else than the same three Pokemons? And don't tell me to go to another area, because I was in Ottawa and I was still catching Rattatats and Drowsies for some reason. That's not entitlement. That's poor game design.
Mm-hmm. No, totally agree.
All right, we're going to leave the sad behind and go to the happy. We're going to go to the happy place. Our happy place. Our games of the year when we come right back. Last but not least, I'm here with the crew, and we're getting into, finally, Game of the Year.
Yes.
So I'm going to go around the table. I know we couldn't play everything, each and every one of us, because, like, we have lives. We don't video game professionally for a job as much as we'd like to.
But yeah, I mean, we've all played a fair amount of stuff. Some of us have doubled up on things. So we have enough folks here to be able to comment back and forth. But yeah, I'm going to roll around the table here. Kat, I want you to go third place, runner up, then game of the year. Go
ahead. Okay. So my third runner up of the year, it's Forza Horizon 3. Amazing game, by the way. If you like driving game, pick it up. My second place is Fire Emblem Fates. Any of the three, just get it, play it.
Just get it, just play it. Just
my game of the year is, I'm so happy because it's an indie game, it's affordable, and it brought back a genre that we fell in love with as kids, and that's Stardew Valley.
Nice.
Stardew Valley honestly gives, it's a very simple offering. But it's a very engrossing game. And it was a nostalgic experience because of Harvest Moon. Mm. But at the same time, it was a brand new experience. It was weird. It was such a weird dichotomy. And I love Stardew Valley so much. It's a very soothing game. The graphics, there's a bit of story. There's a discovery aspect, the exploration. There's also a management aspect. You do have to farm. You do have to make money. Mm. And you need to hit some milestones. You can hit those milestones as fast or as slow as you want. And just the fact that this masterpiece was done by one guy. Yeah. He did the gameplay, insane. The programming. He did all the graphics. He even composed the music. And the music is one of the best part of the game, in my opinion. Mm. I'm just like, are you fucking kidding me? So for me, and it's a bit like last year, I picked Neko Atsume because it helped me get through a very hard time in my life, and I played a lot of Neko Atsume while it was happening, but I played a lot of Stardew Valley in the aftermath. Mm. Because what they don't tell you about grief is not that it's going to be bad right after it happens, it's the 3 months later. Mm. And Stardew Valley was a game I played a lot when I couldn't seem to get a hold of my life, that everything seemed to go wrong, and I couldn't get things back, like, back where they needed to be. And just the fact that I had Stardew Valley, it was soothing, and it helped me just, I had to think about my farm, I had to organize things, it got me back in my mindset, so then it was easier for me to get my life going again.
You got to focus on something different.
But it also, it's just like, you know, I have all of these things to do, and I can't seem to be able to do them, but the fact that, you know, for Stardew Valley, I have to think about the fact that the general store is closed on Wednesday. I have to think about the fact that this crop takes this many days to grow, and I can only plant it, like, you know, pumpkins, you can only plant like twice in the season and things like that. Mm-hmm. When I got hit with stuff like mortgage, or I switched jobs, and like, you have to get this and this and this done, I wasn't dumbfounded anymore. I wasn't swirling in chaos. I was like, all right, no, I have that thought process is given back to me thanks to Stardew Valley.
I think that's something that non-gamers don't realize. Like, people think that we live virtual lives to escape our real life, but people don't realize the things that you learn in your virtual life.
God. Yes.
Can be so, like, cathartic, but also very important to your real life. And it's like you just mentioned, like, learning how to manage all those things in Stardew Valley, they were skills that you could apply to your real life to help you work through your grief and getting back on track and you know, compartmentalizing things and getting things in order. And that's really important.
Yeah. It is. And it's like, it affects me more than, let's say, like, The Witcher 3 is a great game. A lot of people picked it as Game of the Year last year, and it's still going. Like, it's got great DLCs. But for me, games like The Witcher or Assassin's Creed or even, you know, The Division or Uncharted will never give me, it will never affect me in the way that simpler games will affect me.
Yeah.
I'll always have more attachment towards games that are not just bells and whistle, or, you know, we're following the AAA recipe.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm falling more and more in love with indie games or smaller production games or mobile games. And, you know, I'm playing Skyrim Special Edition, a game that I loved. Why? Even though it's a AAA production, it gave a lot of room to breathe, and I made it my own.
Mm-hmm.
I made the game I wanted to play, and that's a big thing, and that's not something I never got out of Assassin's Creed, and I'm a huge Assassin's Creed fan, but they will never give me that. I will play every Assassin's Creed game, but they won't. They will never be as memorable as all those other games I love. Assassin's Creed Syndicate is not as memorable as Stardew Valley or Neko Itsume. I'm going to put it there. I didn't even finish it.
And, you know, there's something to say about indie games that, like it or not, starting a game like a Witcher, it's daunting. There's so many, like, so much stuff to do, so much stuff on the map.
You get this game and they're like, by the way, it's going to be a 40, 60-hour game, and we're going to release 3 DLCs.
Yeah.
We're already telling you it's going to take 100 hours of your life. Because,
like, sometimes you feel that you don't have control over it. Whereas, like, smaller games, like you were saying, it's easy to grasp the concept. It's easy to understand everything, what's going on, and then it's just enjoying yourself. And I think that's why that's the main appeal of a lot of indie games and smaller games, that you can just pick it up, start playing, and have fun away.
The mechanic of Stardew Valley got me so bad that I didn't even realize I had spent 30 hours when I got to the 30-hour mark.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all of a sudden, wham, it's you. Like, there goes my weekend. I had so much fun.
Yeah.
I have 86 hours in Stardew Valley right now. Mm-hmm. And I would have more if I didn't stop myself from playing to finish other games or to just stop, because I can't stop. Like, I'm playing too much. The first time, I did take a long break from it, because at one point I kind of like got bored, but then he released more content and more updates, and as soon as there's a Stardew Valley update, I'm like, yeah, bitch. But it's a $15 game and I've got 86 hours in it.
It's unbelievable.
If you're thinking about, like, the investment,
it's crazy. That's insane.
Awesome.
Allie, third runner-up, and then your game of the year with explanation, please.
My third runner-up this year was Far Harbor, the DLC for Fallout 4. I loved it. My runner-up was Oxenfree, and my game of the year was Stardew Valley. And I think we kind of pretty much covered all there is to say. I mean, I love Stardew just because it was this tour de force that kind of took all the best aspects of my favorite farming lifestyle simulator games, like Harvest Moon and Rune Factory and Animal Crossing, and kind of perfected the best aspects of each and packaged it at a very reasonable price.
Mm-hmm.
But my runner-up, so I'll talk about my runner-up just because we already went super in-depth into Stardew Valley. Oxenfree is a small indie game published by, or in conjunction with, Skybound. And it wasn't an experience I went into knowing what it was all about. I actually bought it just because of the name Oxenfree. Playing Kick the Can with my cousins and then yelling Ollie Ollie Oxenfree was a really pivotal part of my childhood, and the name just struck a chord with me, and I shelled out, I think it was $19 at the time, to buy it, and I didn't know what I was getting into, and what I played was one of the best narrative experiences I think I've ever had. It was a emotional tale. I don't want to like kind of go into it, because I hope other people will pick it up and play. It's emotional, it's scary, it's unnerving, it's interesting, it feels very real. And I remember sitting in the dark playing it and having to turn a light on, because I felt like this game was a presence in the room with me. And it's not a scary game. It's not jump scares and terribleness and gore. There's no gore at all. There's no jump scares. But it's very emotional, and it plays with you. And it's funny because it's like a platformer, But it's very pulled out, the camera. So the characters are like little ants. Mm-hmm. They're very small, and they have these little word bubbles, and you select what your character says, and you can actually play the whole game silently, which is an interesting experience. But you're removed from this experience, but you're affecting the experience. It was a really special game to me this year, and I think, honestly, if you haven't picked it up and played it, you really should. I wish I could go into more detail without spoiling the entire thing.
Yeah.
But the story is very, very good.
I think you're selling it well.
Yes.
Because now I'm intrigued because I didn't really know about the game.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go give it a spin.
Visually, it's gorgeous. It's very interesting. And you won't be disappointed.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. Simon.
Hello.
3, 2, 1.
So for number 3, it's going to have to be World of Warcraft Legion. Even though it's the game I'm currently playing the most and I'm taking in the most hours in, it's not my game of the year. Number 2, we have Dark Souls. Well, it was tough, but number 2 is Dark Souls 3. It was a close call between Dark Souls 3 and my number 1 game, which is Overwatch. I probably played more Overwatch, played more Dark Souls 3. I probably played more Legion. But I feel that for everything that it's doing for the gaming community as a whole, I feel that Overwatch, in my book, has to be Game of the Year. Like, I kind of have, like, a gaming ADD where I switch games very often, except WoW. And I always come back to Overwatch, and I never feel overwhelmed, and I never feel that it's... that I've lost anything. And it's I always just come, you know, pick it back up, and... just because what they're able to do and what they're going to do with the game, I feel that it's going to be a pivotal point in just gaming in general, which is why I think that Overwatch should be up there in what it is. So, yep. I don't have any emotional story, sorry. I just love the games. And, well, I mean, and Dark Souls 3, I can talk a bit about Dark Souls 3, which we've all been waiting for, and it's going to be the last Dark Souls game from Software, so... you know, that's also something to think about, and we only have one DLC left, and hopefully the story finishes, hopefully, you know, knowing Miyazaki, we never know, but Dark Souls 3 is everything that you could want from a Dark Souls game, pretty much. It's not Bloodborne, it's not Dark Souls 1, even though I prefer Bloodborne, I feel Dark Souls 3 encompasses the experience that you can have by playing a Dark Souls game. Like, if you want to start the Dark Souls series, Dark Souls 3 is probably the best game to start, because it's easy to start, it's easy to understand, much more than Dark Souls 1, which kicked my ass the first time I tried. Mm-hmm. Like, I had played Bloodborne through and through and had a blast, and then I started playing Dark Souls 1, and I remember I was texting Catherine's boyfriend, who plays a lot too, and I was like so mad and frustrated, like, why the fuck are they putting enemies there? It's so dumb. There's nothing you can do about it. And I feel that Dark Souls 3 has that, but less, because instead of being put in front of super, super hard enemies, you're being put in front of a boss to start. And when you understand how to beat that boss, you're going to have that moment where you click, and then the game becomes amazing. So I feel that for that, just for that moment, for like, and that's what I'm saying, everyone who starts playing Dark Souls, don't give up on it. Like, put in hours that you'll need to start understanding, and then eventually it's going to click, and you're going to understand what you need to do, and it's going to be like the best 40 hours you're going to spend for a long ass time. So don't give up on Dark Souls. That's what I'm saying, play it.
All right, so my third place is Watch Dogs 2.
Oh.
Reason being, I really like Watch Dogs 1. I was hard on Watch Dogs 2, but then I really warmed up to it.
Came around.
And it. I think it might be my first platinum on the PS4.
Oh yeah.
Period.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I might actually sit down and platinum that game. Pokemon Moon is my runner up. I can't believe I got so into a Pokemon game again. It shouldn't be surprising, but I was really on the outs with Pokemon for a while because I thought it was redundant. Game of the year. Uncharted 4.
Oh,
A Thief's
yeah?
End. Because my poor, Poor Nathan Drake.
I needed to know the end of the story.
I won't spoil anything. But I needed the end. And you know what? It was the greatest end to an epic adventure that could have been.
Okay, good. That makes me happy.
I see the promise in the future. But I know Nathan is gone.
Okay,
for me.
Don't tell me.
I can move on to something else. And the fact that we've got, like, they're continuing this series slightly, I guess, through Chloe and Nadine in the new one that was announced at PlayStation Experience. Oh, my God.
That's not her name.
Nadine and Chloe?
Uncharted.
No. That's it. That's it, exactly. I couldn't remember off the top of my head. But, yeah, I'm stoked about that. But it was beautiful. It was epic. There was love. There was fighting. There was everything. Simon, I am so excited for you that you haven't...
Starting, yeah.
You haven't experienced
nope.
Nathan...
None.
And Sully and Alina. Oh, my God. You lucky duck.
Who's the... Is it Nolan North who does Nathan Drake?
Yes. Okay, and he cool. won
I love Nolan
the
North.
Performance.
Hubba hubba.
I know.
Oh, my God. Such an
George
ass man.
Clooney of the video game world.
Exactly.
I mean, have you seen the guy who does Reinhardt? Damn.
Troy Baker's pretty good looking, too.
Yeah, but he's younger.
I know.
He's a young gun.
So...
like for Wimbledon tennis match.
For
I think we just lost.
We've gotten
we
to that point. We've gotten to that point in the podcast. It's good because we're near the end now.
It's late. We're
it's late.
Tipsy
we need to
and
eat.
We're hungry.
We're drinking. Yeah, but look, for all of you out there, we want to know what your game of the year was. What your favorite games of 2016 were. What your disappointments or surprises. The news story that piqued your interest.
Yep.
Tweet at us, The Girls on Games. We're going to be posting all of ours on the website, along with the rest of the crew, because, you know, it's not just the four
yeah.
of us. There's quite a slew of people in
we got
Girls
a lot
on Games.
This year. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's some really interesting answers.
Yes. A lot of variety.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What
I, don't think
I
a lot
like,
of people have the
what
same
I
game.
Like about everybody's answers is that there are people who inverted each other. Some people
oh,
liked
yeah?
something, and then other people were disappointed by it.
Oh, that's
awesome. Really entertaining.
That is so cool.
That's yeah, really that's entertaining. Fantastic. That's why I made it blind, and I made it a questionnaire that people had to fill out.
Nice.
So that, as of the recording of this, or the, that will be out when this podcast airs. I don't know what date yet, but it will be out when this podcast airs.
Whenever this happens.
Whenever this happens.
We're new to this pre-recording.
Yeah, what is this? But yeah, I want to thank the crew around the table, all the members of Girls on Games, and all of the folks who've been reading, watching, listening to our content for a wonderful 2016. Mm. Before I let everybody go, give a round of the table of where you can track these wonderful folks down. Catherine?
You can follow me, CSDESBINS, CSDBIN, on everything. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Steam, Nintendo ID, PlayStation,
Catherine,
Xbox.
I have a question.
Why?
What kind of pictures can people find on your Instagram?
Sunsets and cats.
Thank you.
I love it.
I don't post what I eat. I eat it too fast, but I post sunsets and cats.
That's perfect. And every once in a while, I go to the Jardin Botanique and you post stuff.
Flowers.
Like flowers.
Flowers and penguins.
But
no,
winter is coming, so there's no flowers.
That's fine.
I can do macro photography of like Christmas lights. Would you like that?
Go to Biodome and get penguins. I like penguins.
I already went to the Biodome. There's
again.
A photo of the lynx kitten out in a turkey coma. Pheasant coma.
Oh,
it was
yeah,
eating
like pheasant so. Coma.
And then the otters just like cuddling and napping. Oh. It's all on my Instagram. Go see it. I like cute stuff.
Allie, where can folks find out what you're doing?
Well, people can find me as 8-Bit Blonde pretty much everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and my gamer tag. I post mostly video game related content. Like, my Instagram's just gaming stuff. And don't add me on Xbox if you have a negative KD. Thank you. Bye.
Wow. That is holy shit. Okay.
Woo! Woo! Going out on a bang.
Simon.
Hello.
Hi.
You can find me on Twitter, GOGSimonM. And actually, I'm going to give out PSN too. I have a PSN and I've been playing a lot more consoles.
No
so
one wants to play with you.
I don't care. I have a positive kitty, so shut your mouth. Yeah, you can find me on PSN is SimMark42. So SimMarc42. It's pretty much my name and 42 at the end. So.
Awesome.
Yep.
I'm Leah Jewer on social media.
Okay.
Yes, 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 yes. And because it's the holidays, I'll give out my handle as well. I'm AYU56, that's AU56 on Xbox. And on PlayStation, it's AYU5656 because I don't know why they didn't have just the 156. I don't know. I don't know.
Because reasons.
Because reasons. Because someone got to it before me. Oh, well.
Damn people.
C'est la vie. But, of course, you want to know all that is Girls on Games. Keep following us. You can track us down Facebook and Twitter, The Girls on Games. You can find us on Snapchat and Instagram at Girls on Games. But everything you ever need to know is on girlsongames.ca. Once again. Oh, yeah, we got a Discord channel. Why do we always
get
forget?
Get on Discord, dude.
I know. We do have a Discord. It's
the
on the website. Like I said, anything you need to know is on girlsongames.ca, along with our Discord link. And we often tweeted out as well.
Yep.
And as always, we want to thank Fun.io, our wonderful hosting company. They're awesome. They give us wonderful BPS hosting. And if you are interested in making a website, you should go check them out. They will treat you good. From all of us at Girls on Games, we hope you have a wonderful holiday season, no matter what you might be celebrating. And have a safe and prosperous 2017. Happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.